Good afternoon and welcome to Renegade Radio. For those of you tuning in and who have listened to us before, you know that Renegade Radio is all about breaking the rules of conventional thinking and talking to professionals and about how they have gotten outside of some of these conventional norms to create success in life and business. And I'd say this is a show that has been on the books right from the beginning of Renegade Concepts and Renegade Radio. It's really going to test your limits today a little bit in the way you think. I've got two incredible guests in the studio. They're going to help me really talk about some life experiences that they have shared and gone through, facing fears, doing things that some of you are going to think that's nuts, that's crazy. But stay with us and we'll tie it all together before we're done today. I want to welcome first Perry Bell. He's the president of Solar Energy USA. And then I want to welcome Scott Goodnight, who is from Finding Your Hero. Guys, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Perry, let's jump in and let's start with you. Let's just get some introduction stuff out of the way, and then I really want to blow this discussion wide open and talk about some of these sports that we really love. But Perry, tell us a little bit about Solar USA and a little bit about your background.
Solar Energy USA is basically a solar company that has a commercial division and a residential division. And we deal with not only creating energy through solar, but we also work on energy reduction. On the residential side, we deal with it thermally through insulation and windows. And on the commercial side, we strictly deal with the electrical side, which is power factor correction and mitigation of harmonics, so on and so forth, lighting. And we also deal with solar as well on the commercial side.
All right, so that's business side. Now tell us on the personal side, you're somewhat of an adrenaline junkie, so what type of background do you have in adventure sports? And then let's tie the two together.
Well, the adventure sports side started out being a kid. I always wanted to be a pro motocross racer. I wanted to play football, and then I got a motorcycle and started running around on that, and eventually got into music, found my way out to Los Angeles, and was always trying to find a way to skydive. And not until I made it back to the East Coast did I really start skydiving a lot. And that segued into base jumping, and a lot of people consider that pretty outrageous, but mostly that type of stuff. Skydiving and base jumping, that's kind of what is the identity for the most part.
All right, now when we say skydiving, a lot of people understand what we're talking about. You go up in a plane and you jump out from 14,500 feet or so, and you get about a 60-second free fall, and then you pull that cord and hope that that little chute pops out over your head and you glide gently to the ground. But base jumping is an entirely different sport. For our listeners that have no idea exactly what that means, enlighten us on that activity.
Yeah, base jumping is, they call it an extreme sport, but There's a lot to it. In a skydiving situation, you're going to free fall and reach terminal velocity of at least 120 miles an hour. In a tracking position, you can reach up to 200 miles an hour. And in base jumping, back to skydiving, when your parachute opens, it can open in a period of 500 to 600 feet. It takes a long time for that parachute to open to slow you down. In a base jumping situation, we have our parachutes trying to open anywhere from 50 to 75 feet on a short jump or a low jump, and on a high jump we'll go slider up, and you know, it depends on what we're up against and how fast we want it to open, but we prepare for it to open depending on, you know, how high the jump is and how fast we're going, but it can be 300 feet sometimes.
Now, there's a uniqueness to base jumping compared to skydiving that I always like to point out, and that's the fact that there's no reserve parachute when it comes to base jumping.
There is no reserve parachute. It's a crazy science, and when you do anything enough, you eventually see some things that you may not want to see, of course, but also you're exposed to a lot of experiences that make you better if you live through them. And but yes, it's an extreme sport, I would have to say, for sure.
Now, when we think about extreme sports like that, the first thing that pops in the mind of a lot of people is, that's crazy, right? I'd never do that. You're foolish, you know, whatever way they like to describe the fact that you're doing something so far on the edge. But you're a normal-headed guy, yeah?
Yeah, I think I'm normal. I mean, you know, when you're a business owner, you're taking a risk, and you're taking a leap of faith, and that faith is really in yourself first and foremost. If you believe in yourself and you're grounded as a person and you trust that you're going to make the right decisions, then you're probably going to succeed. And like you and I had probably spoken earlier, I mean, you're never going to do anything if you don't think you're going to succeed. So if there was ever a point in time where I didn't think that I was going to survive, then I wouldn't make the jump. And I can think of, out of all my jumps, there was one that I did back out of before I even went because I just had the wrong feeling. But for the most part, you know, you have to pay attention to yourself and you have to be confident in yourself. And Scott will elaborate on that as well. I mean, that gets into what he's all about, and that's facing your fears. But I attacked it on my own. I went down that path myself, and I found my fears, and I didn't want those on my docket. I wanted to rid myself of all those things. So I attacked them systematically and in a calculated way. I didn't just go jump off a cliff. I didn't just jump out of an airplane. I got the proper training. I found a mentor, and I learned to do the things that I wanted to do so I could overcome my fear. And quite honestly, and initially, I was afraid of heights. And I said, well, what better way to get rid of my fears by jumping out of an airplane? You can't get much higher than that, so I'm going to go do that. Now, keep in mind, I was extremely scared when I did that first. But when I was going up in the, when I was driving to the drop zone, I said, you know, this is great. I'm going to do this professionally. And then when I got in the plane, I was about ready to jump out. I said, you know, if I survive, this is going to be the only time I do it. And then when you get back on the ground, you feel like a hero again, and the whole cycle starts over again. So there's an internal calling that says, this is what I want to do. I mean, there was no other reason. I had that drive.
Well, now, you mentioned something very interesting. You said you got the proper training, you got the mentor, and you know, having gone through, I've not base jumped, but I've been through the skydiving arena for sure, so I understand where you're coming from. Were you able to apply those same principles to being an entrepreneur, to starting a business? And if so, what type of impact has that had on your success?
Well, I think you're kind of wired a certain way, and if you're not, you can manipulate your wiring to become who you want to be, and you can be that person. And I've become a couple of things in my life of what I wanted to be at that time, and that's changed over time as well. But I mean, I sold vegetables out of a wheelbarrow when I was 6 years old, door to door, because I wanted to get some dogs, and then it turned into a motorcycle, and I would cut grass for those things. So I've always had the entrepreneurial, at least the work spirit as well. So, but I've become better at that over time after going through these things, because instead of just getting out and grinding my nose against the ground and trying to make something happen, there's a systematic way of dealing with things in a calculated fashion. So yes, all of these things have related to that on the operation side, on the sales side, on the functionality of it all. And keep in mind, if you're around people in a social environment, you're always having to semi-defend yourself in these situations. So it forces you to have some type of communication skills and say, this is what I'm doing, and this is why I'm not crazy, and this is why you can trust me as a person type thing.
Well, let's do this. Let me jump over, because I got more stuff I want to include you on, but I want to make it an open forum. I want to get Scott in here. So, Scott, let's introduce your company real quick. So, Finding Your Hero is what you're all about, and that's an evolution of your business, if I understand correctly, right?
Yes. For about the past 6 years, I've made my life and my mission about helping people try to find a direction in their life. Really what I hope to help people find is a mission and a purpose, not just a better job or just to open a business, but something that they can really leave a legacy with, because I believe that's the highest human need. I mean, we all have needs. We have the need to survive. We have the need for love and belonging and security and self-esteem. These are all the things that we all need. But what really drives people, I think, is the need to have a purpose in life, to have a meaning. And so what you see in society right now is really interesting. I mean, we've got, according to the CDC, this is the Center for Disease Control, 37% of Americans are now obese. That means they have 30% body fat or higher. Half of America is on drugs, prescription drugs. That's not even the illegal stuff. Consumer debt is now 1,700% higher than it was in 1970. Jobs, we've got half of the job. I think the rate of jobs that we had 4 years ago, it's doubled the unemployment. So we're in really challenging and difficult times. And so what happens is people start telling themselves a victim story. They start telling themselves a critic story about things outside of them, the economy, the president, you know, whatever. Just they blame it on stuff and they become the critic. Or they just give up and become the bystander. And from that point of view, from that mindset, as we were talking about before the radio show even started, they have these feelings of fear, of anger, of shame, depression, pride, envy, And from those states of mind, those are painful states of mind. So people choose to do all these things. They overeat. They take drugs. They use credit. And those cause those outcomes that we discussed earlier. The Finding Your Hero Project is about finding a different character. It's called the hero. The hero acts with courage. The hero takes self-responsibility, doesn't blame it on things outside of them. They live in a state of acceptance, a state of willingness, a state of love and compassion for themselves and for other people. And they have the mantra that's always rolling in their head, I am responsible. If it's to be, it's up to me. So by helping people just make that one shift into the identity of the hero, you're bringing them into a place where all the other things change automatically. The values change automatically. The beliefs change automatically. The behaviors, the habits, all those things that people are trying to change, but they can't change because at their core, they're playing the victim. They're playing the critic. They're playing the bystander. You could do all the affirmations you want all day long, day by day, in every way, my life's getting better and better. And that voice in your head says, bullshit, it's not getting better.
That's right.
Right? That's the critic. Okay.
Well, let's talk about how you do that because, you know, we see you talk about the affirmations. We've heard that, right? Everybody's,
yes.
You know, read a book somewhere that talks about the positive affirmations. And I love T. Harv Eker, right? You
right.
know, the millionaire mindset and all that. I get it, you know, but at the same time, you got to sometimes make a physical jolt.
You can't read a book and learn how to skydive, can you?
No,
you've
got to.
You got to actually go out and do it. You can't read a book and learn how to ride a bicycle. I had a guy one time. I invited him to a firewalk, and he said, "Oh, I know how to do it. It's all physics." I saw MythBusters. I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, so what are some of the goals you have in your life?" He said, "Oh, I want to be a millionaire, and I want to do this and that." And I said, "Well, why actually do it? Why make the $1 million? Why not just read a book and then you'll know how to do it?"
That's right. Yeah.
Life is about experience. People want, more than anything, people want to feel alive. And what's happened is they've sold out. They've sold out the original core values that this country was founded on,
right.
Which is freedom, which is courage, which is independence. And they've sold them out for security and conformity. And they're always thinking, what will people think? What will people say? What if I fail? We've become a nation of wimps.
Well, that's
really,
what,
honestly.
You know, the key thing that I was going to say before you even just said it was that's pretty much the mentality that built this country was the value system.
Yeah, where is
and
it
the
now?
Belief in yourself. I mean, that's what built this country. So now there's a lot of excuses. But you know, I don't want to throw dirt on the grave of the country because I think that spirit still lives. And I think what you're doing is great because you're helping people find that purpose. And before, the purposes were much more simple. I think it's harder to find that purpose now. And I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing. And people like me have to go down the long road and the hard road. And you don't have to do these things that I do to find that. It's just I personally needed to go through those. And I'm thankful that I'm alive to talk about it. But yeah, you can do it through a lot of different ways.
Yeah, sure. And I did it the same way you did. And it took me 20 years right. to finally put it all together. And so what the Finding Your Hero Project is really about is shortening up the process. And it's really yeah. interesting when you were talking about, you know, setting the goals, finding a mentor, getting the training. I mean, those are the first steps that most people avoid. They hear the call to adventure and they refuse the call.
Right.
And then they're too proud to get a mentor. And then they don't want to do the training and they don't want to form a band of allies around them. And if you watch any Hollywood movie, you'll see all these elements. It happens in every movie. It's in every novel. But for some reason, people have got it at arm's distance. So our mission is about bringing it into consciousness. It's like a recipe. It's like a combination that opens a safe. It's like a formula. It's like a map. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It's not about hard work. It's not about hard work to find a treasure. It's about having the right map. And yeah. so that's what we try to do, shorten up the process. So you don't have to take all this time like we did. It can happen really fast. When it happens, it almost happens instantly when people have the wake up.
Well, you said something unique. You used the word conformity. And I mean, that's really, that's kind of what I see. Perry and I were talking before the show about this idea of conformity, right? Socially accepted norms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, skydiving, statistically, you're far less likely to die in a skydiving accident than you are in a car accident. I mean, per capita, more people die in car accidents than in skydiving. Yet every
on the
day,
way over here, raining, traffic,
exactly,
285,
right?
I'm like,
but people
man,
climb in their cars every day and think nothing about it because it is a socially accepted norm
mm-hmm.
to take that risk. But jumping out of a plane is crazy, right? You know, exactly.
You'll get used to anything. It's like the old boiling the frog alive. Have you ever heard? I know you guys have heard this one, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can even Google boiling a frog alive or put it on YouTube and watch a video on it. This is what's happened. And the way that they've done it, they started back in the 20s, and it's now it's perfected. Marketing is perfected. The average adult in America receives 1,000 marketing messages a day. So you can call it conditioning. They literally call it on TV, they call it programming. What do you do when you got a computer? You reprogram it. So the problem is there's a lot of viruses in people out there. The fears, the irrational beliefs. And if you don't take those off, I mean, what happens when your computer's all infected with viruses? It doesn't work.
Well, that's true. It's that virus thing. I mean, I'm thinking about the obesity rate. You know, I mean, this is something unique and interesting to me. If you've noticed, people have not only begun to accept obesity, but almost
defend it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's like I'm comfortable with my body. I'm happy with who I am. Look, nobody's trying to take away who you are.
It's excuses and compromises.
Exactly. But being obese just because you don't want to do what's necessary not to be because it's too hard or too uncomfortable.
They don't want to turn off the TV.
Ridiculous. Exactly.
They're projecting their character onto the characters in the TV shows or onto the news, and that's the critic. Well, I'd rather see somebody else's life suck than to actually admit my life sucks and do something about it. So it's easy to point the finger or, ha, 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 I'm going to laugh at the people on American Idol when they get kicked off, and that makes me feel good. Or it's the same thing when you see an accident on the highway. You're in the right lane. There's a little small accident, but it caused 10 miles of backed up traffic. The really interesting thing is on the other side of the road where there's no accident, they're backed up 10 miles.
They're slowing down too.
Because everybody's looking. I call it the zebra effect. You ever seen the zebras on the Serengeti, like on Wild Kingdom or whatever, and the lions are chasing. They finally catch one. As soon as they catch the zebra, the whole rest of the crowd, they stop literally 50 yards away and watch their friend being eaten alive. And that's what the nightly news is, and that's what American Idol is, and that's what Jersey Shore is. It's all distractions to keep people from looking in the mirror and saying, what's wrong with you, dude? Why don't you live up to your potential?
Well, and our third guest is our host, Andy. So you got to give us some background on you as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I feel like a lot of the listeners know me already, but you know, I share your affinity for these same ideas. You know, it's you can't just stand up and say, "Hey, I believe that in order to succeed, you got to break the rules of conventional thinking." You really got to live that motto, and I try to do that. And you know, I found success in, you know, as a kid coming up through BMX freestyle. You know, I remember standing at the top of a quarter pipe and thinking, I wonder if I can throw the bike over the edge and ride this thing down. You know, so we've all been there. But that evolved into some other activities. I've done skydiving. I've done rappelling. I was actually on the stunt force team for a little while for the Georgia Arena football team. And that was pretty exciting coming out of Phillips Arena.
Last year you were in the Ironman, is that correct?
I did an Ironman last year, which was, you know, not an extreme sport in the sense of imminent death. But I can tell you it was definitely a mind-shifting process to go through the training, especially considering that a year before, I barely huffed out a five-minute run without collapsing on the floor. So,
yeah.
You know, are you a Matt Hoffman fan or a Tony Hawk fan?
You know, I was born in the Matt Hoffman era, and came up. I mean, he was young on the scene when I was riding. So you know, we were definitely because he was more bicycling. You know, mm-hmm. Tony Hawk was more skateboarding. I speed wobbles were not my friend when it came to skateboarding, so I went the bicycle route.
Right on. I saw there was something on YouTube the other day. I forget who it was. There's another BMX guy. Who's the other really famous dude? There's a film out. They said he's broken more bones than Evel Knievel.
Wow.
Yeah. You're gonna break a lot of bones when you do those things. I mean, and
Jeb Corliss just broke his leg in South Africa, 6 months ago? Now he's jumping right back again.
Yeah,
the other
Yeah, Jeb, he you know, he's pushing the envelope, and there's some people who will probably not make it, and that's just because they keep pushing it and pushing it. And that's their calling, and if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. So,
but, you know, I think the thing that really jumps out at me there is we talk about this idea of these guys breaking bones, and we talk about some of these risks. The message we're trying to drive today, though, is really around the word fear. You know, it's what limits us as humans is that we let fear of a possible outcome hold us back from the experience. And that's really what we're trying to break through here, right?
Yeah, and I think you do it a lot with speaking and things like that as well, Andy. But, you know, fear is not something that you don't have. It's something that you embrace.
Yes.
And people say, well, you must be fearless because you're going to jump off the edge of a building. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. I'm very afraid, but I want to understand my fears and I want to manage to my fears. I don't want to be ruled by my fears. I want to control my fears and I want to be in control of myself. So yeah, I embrace the fears and it's just like a problem. A lot of people have the woe is me thing. Like, well, if it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Victim.
And once you start, yeah, exactly. And once you start thinking like that, then it compounds. And that's the whole point of this. And I was making the analogy the other day that is, I said, you know, a lot of times kids aren't afraid of a lot of things. And that's because they don't know what to be afraid of. But there's something to be said about that. They don't know to be afraid, so they're not afraid. And when you're not afraid of things, things kind of tend to work out sometimes. But as an adult, you know a little bit more, and you have to calculate and understand your fears and embrace them just like you would a problem. Problems happen to everybody. Nobody is immune from issues or problems. So you want to work those problems out, deal with the problems one at a time. And this is the same with fears. You deal with fears as well and embrace them and accept them. That's part of being alive. If I wasn't afraid, then I would be bored doing the things that I like to do.
Well, you just said something interesting about children, and we've literally done some social experiments where we carry snakes out, totally harmless, boa constrictors, pythons. They don't bite, and they're not venomous at all. And, I mean, they're literally as harmless as puppy dogs. I mean, actually, you'd have a better chance of getting bit by a puppy and getting an infection or a cat scratching you. They're harmless, but people have been conditioned to be afraid. So we take these snakes out and we go out into the environment on city streets, down to the beach. We carried them around on the beach and people freak out or they're very curious. But you know what really blew us away? The kids. The kids come running up and they want to touch the snake. They have no fear. They have no fear. We're only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noise. Every other fear is learned. And what we also noticed was the parents coming up and jerking the kids away. That's how they learn fear. And I saw you just take a big deep breath there.
Yeah,
what did that mean?
Well, that point resonates so well. I have a little girl. She's 20 months old. And she was over with a lady who keeps her during the day, 3 days a week. And as she was visiting, my wife went to pick her up. And we had our puppy in the car. You know, we have a 3-year-old Boston Terrier. And so the dog's in the car, and the little boy, or one of the little boys where she stays, saw the dog in the car and said, "Ooh," says, "is that your dog?" And my wife said, "Yeah, that's our dog Bella. Would you like to come out and pet her?" And the little boy says, "Yeah." And about that time, the grandmother stood up and said, "No, no, no, honey, remember, you're afraid of dogs."
Oh, nice.
And the little boy goes, oh yeah, I don't want to go.
I forgot I'm afraid.
Yeah, exactly. It was the most...
And on tonight's news, the top story is they lead it with fear.
Exactly. You know? I mean, it was just a really eye-opening moment about how fear isn't just learned. It's literally taught to us in cases.
Yes.
And we become afraid, not through our own experiences, but through the irrational nature of others.
I was on a TV show about a month ago, and they called and they wanted us to bring the snake on and talk about the Adventure Club and talk about helping people get over fear. That was the whole, it was a daytime talk show, and I'm glad to do it anytime. I feel like, you know, part of my mission is just to pay it forward, to help educate the public about what's really going on. I'm in the studio and I'm waiting, I'm mic'd up and I'm watching the show begin, and I've never seen the show before. So I'm thinking it's going to be some sort of lighthearted, like daytime show. The colors are real bright. And they did 5 stories in a row before I came on. And every one of them was about some tragedy. It was about some, guy flew out of a truck and they showed the video. And then they replayed it. Let's watch that again. Oh my God, look at that. How did he survive? And I'm watching that and it's all interesting. But then the one that really got me was the woman said, and today the CDC issued a warning about getting married. And I'm like, okay, what's this about? And I'm listening for the evidence why. They never gave anything. It wasn't like, oh, there's a danger of dehydration or heat stroke or getting scammed by wedding planners. There was no evidence. It was just a little drop of fear. They take the authority of the CDC, combine that with a message about taking a specific action, getting married, and it creates fear in people. And I have to ask myself, what's the point of that message? The Center for Disease Control and a message about fear, to keep people from doing one of the things that this whole country is founded upon, which is the family coming together. And that's another statistic I didn't mention earlier. I mean, we're at an all-time high rate for relationships not working out. And it's because there's so much stress about money, and we can't keep up with the standards anymore. And the credit's over. It's out. It's dried up. You can't fake it till you make it anymore. You got to get real. So it's constantly, constantly being programmed in to be afraid. And if you're not training yourself to have courage and to live with passion, you're being trained to have fear in you. You're being trained to have envy in you and jealousy and anger. They're programming that in because then they can offer the solution. So we say at the Finding Your Hero Project, if you're not consciously training to be a hero, you're being trained to be a victim. You're being trained to be a critic. You're being trained to be a bystander. In essence, you're being trained to be a consumer.
It's no different than, you know, what Andy does to train to do a triathlon. And if you continually train, then eventually you can change something that's not working. When you started your first day, you were not able to perform. But a year later, you're able to perform. And you have to find those topics that are going to be your leaders for your thought process. Like number one, like Scott said, you got to find that purpose. And it can't be a shallow reason. It has to be a fulfillment reason. And I think the one thing that we haven't really touched on is probably fulfillment, because ultimately that's what we're all looking for. And it can be through bad habits or good habits. Through the bad habits, you're trying to find this fulfillment that's elusive and never and won't exist through those ways. And through the good habits, you can find fulfillment as well. But as I speak to older people, you know, those are the guys who are around, and you're trying to figure out, hey, what's the secret? Because these guys certainly know more than I do. Whether they've done the things I've done or not, I'm sure they know more than I know. And the common denominator from the guys who really had the above average level of understanding, they said fulfillment comes from giving. And
yes,
the only way to truly give is you have to, you know, the bottom line is a lot of the things that we do are self-centered, but you have to go through that process and understanding yourself, and then understanding how you click as an individual, and then you
can't
learn
give
how to
away
give.
What you don't have.
Right, and then you can give, and it doesn't have to be a dollar. It has to be something that is tangible or intangible, but you give this away without expecting something in return. And like I was speaking with you know, Andy earlier, I said the act of jumping off a building or an antenna or a cliff may be selfish because I'm going for that fulfillment. But the gift part of it is that you're showing that it can be done, and there are no limitations or boundaries, and you do believe in yourself, and it has to be calculated. But the fulfillment part is important, as important as having a purpose. But having a purpose leads you to that part. You know, that's the ultimate thing.
Well, I'm going to talk kind of in between this two and throw this subject out and see what you guys think on it. So the buzzword now in this higher purpose thing that everybody's focused on is passion. Right? Be happy. Pursue your passions and do what you enjoy. In fact, I saw somebody on Facebook the other day ask the question, you know, how do you decide, you know, when you've got to start cutting things out of your life, what do you cut out? And one of the replies they got was, just take anything that doesn't make you happy and stop doing that. What do you guys think about that idea?
Well, that's easy. I mean, if it's not necessarily about making you happy or not, but back to that point, is what do you get from it, and what do other people get from what you're doing? So if you take something like what Scott's doing, I mean, he's impacting other people. That's pretty powerful. So there are a lot of things that he's not going to want to do that he's going to do that ultimately have a fulfillment tag, tag to that. So I think it has to be beyond the selfish part, but, you know, it comes from that. But you do have to shed things because there's only so much that you can do in a day, obviously.
I was just, I grabbed this book off the bookshelf. It's a little book called Tao Te Ching. And
it appears you've read it a few times.
I've had this book for like 20 years.
It's looking a little worn.
When I started out reading books, and then I learned, well, you can't, you know, embody the principle. You have to wire it in. You have to go out and do the action. But I just grabbed this one last night for some reason. And it says in here, there's a time for being ahead. There's a time for being behind. A time for being in motion, a time for being at rest, a time for being vigorous, a time for being exhausted, a time for being safe, a time for being in danger, The master sees things as they are, without trying to control them. She lets them go their own way and resides at the center of the circle. So what I think people have been conditioned to believe in is the magic pill, the happy ending, the quick fix, the business in a box. And the truth is you're going to have to just look at how babies learn how to walk. They fall and fall and fall. So part of that process, there's some tears, there's some bumps, there's some bruises, but they're there to teach you. Pain is your friend. Suffering is the angry gym teacher that's got you in detention after school because you didn't pay attention in class. Pain's the teacher. Suffering is what you get if you don't pay attention. Suffering's optional. Pain's inevitable. If you just go ahead and accept that, then that helps you get over the fear. The fear of suffering, the fear of pain, the fear of ridicule, being laughed at, opposed, that's what stops people. But you have to go through those things. You have to go through the laughter. You have to go through the ridicule. You have to go through the opposition. It makes you stronger. Because if you're going to be a business leader, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have to be a leader of people. You're going to have to figure out that really that's about leading yourself and accepting that it's all a process of learning and growth.
Right, and pain has many different faces. You know, pain can be the slow physical demise of your body that is much more painful than the alternative, not being unfit. You know, being a fit person is much less painful. It is painful when you're lifting the weight or walking that extra mile or eating that spinach as opposed to a cookie. I mean, and there's a balance of all of that as well, and there's a healthy balance of all of that. But if you condition yourself in the wrong way, then it continually goes the wrong way, of course.
Well, I think this is a little bit about, Scott, what some of your programs are all about. Because, you know, if you think about it, just Perry, going on what you were saying, there's pain in being a victim, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's pain associated
There's familiarity, and that's what people want.
And
more, they want certainty.
It's an acceptance of that pain versus the pain. I had a mentor use the word to describe it for me as a perturbation. And basically, it was built on Prigogine's second law of thermodynamics, talking about how that if you put anything under heat and pressure for a long enough period of time, you can molecularly change an object.
Yes.
And it's an irreversible, unrecognizable, unpredictable effect. And most people never go through that long-term change because they're not willing to put themselves in the heat and then remain there long enough. Ironically, they will stay in the victim heat as long as necessary and pine about being the victim. But how do your programs take people, Scott, and actually allow them to step into the heat on purpose and go through that transformation?
Well, one of the first things that I had to accept in learning to do this work is that it's not going to work for most people. Most people are not, they're so conditioned by the system that we live in and I was too. I mean, this is my story. I wanted both. I wanted enlightenment and $1 million. And I'm not saying you can't have that, but you have to choose which is more important. And to talk to people about these higher states of mind, which is what everybody wants at the end, that's the biggest magic trick of all, to convince people that you don't really want the car, you don't want the ring, you don't want the house, you don't want the trophy wife or the husband or success or any of these concepts. What you really want are feelings. You really want to feel secure. You really want to feel loved. You want to feel high self-esteem. You want to feel like your life has purpose. And what these clever marketers have done, they've attached the idea that you can get those things, those feelings, through things. And we're in the third generation of this now. It started in the 20s. You can watch an excellent series called The Century of Self. And you can look it up on YouTube, you can Google it, and it really explains how this whole consumerism thing started, and we're at the end of it, not working now, and people are waking up from it. So I have to catch people when they're in enough pain. That's what has to happen. And the other big thing, the big problem that I have with people is pride. I mean, literally, right after 9/11, too, you saw a million bumper stickers, American pride, American pride. Yeah, you're blind. You can't really see what's going on. Okay, so you have to get over the pride. You have to get into a state of humbleness and willingness. Then you have to get a mentor. You have to get a mentor. Okay, it's like being a brain surgeon. You're the best brain surgeon in the world, and you get a brain tumor, would you operate on your own brain?
Somebody's been there before you, guaranteed.
Right. You wouldn't operate on your own brain, even if you were the best brain surgeon in the world, because you can't see what's wrong with it.
Well, that's a great example. Let me hang on that for a second because of Perry's phrasing about somebody's been there before you. Just to clarify and see if you guys agree with this, my contention is your mentor does not necessarily have to be smarter than you.
Absolutely not. Right. And usually, if you're smart enough to get a mentor, and a mentor can be a mentor without knowing they're being a mentor to you, but oftentimes they recognize it. But that means that usually a good mentor will recognize that you will probably become better than them. It's no different than probably a parent.
I'll give you an example of how this works. Have you ever had a problem? We've all done this. And you're just stuck. And you can't figure out the answer. And you go to pick up the phone to call dad or mom or a wise mentor or friend. And you've been stuck with this for hours or maybe days. And you finally let the pride down. You're like, all right, I'll ask for help. And while the phone is ringing, as soon as they pick it up, you already got the answer. You ever had that? You're smiling, you're laughing.
Yeah.
So the purpose of a mentor is to do what we call hold space and hold a container of safety for you to get out of your own way and let your unconscious mind, which already has the answer, just kind of let it bubble up to the top. A good, not to keep going back to this book, but it also says a master does his job and then stops. He understands that the universe is forever out of control and that trying to dominate events goes against the current of the Tao. Because he believes in himself, he doesn't try to convince others. Because he is content with himself, he doesn't need others' approval. Because he accepts himself, the whole world accepts him. And he talks more about this. He talks about a really great leader. He does things and people love him for it, or her. A bad leader, people resent them and resist them. But the truly enlightened leader, the people say, it's amazing. We did it all on our own. A really good mentor is almost invisible, is not even there.
Yeah, and it deals with, and even getting back to business, I mean, truly the guys who create a legacy are usually pretty nameless. Your more powerful guys or flamboyant people, once they leave, then everything collapses around them. The guys who are true leaders are operate much more in a nameless fashion, and they empower the people around them, and they create this momentum that doesn't hinge on their own existence. You know, if you create that everything revolves around you, then that doesn't hold as much weight as somebody who can create a true legacy that goes past them.
Give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, he'll feed himself for a lifetime. One of the characteristics of a hero is unselfishness and the not wanting to be in the spotlight. I mean, just think of every Hollywood movie you ever watched, the hero's like, no, not me. You know, I'm just an average Joe. And they're almost thrust onto the adventure, on the journey, unwillingly. And they do it because they feel obligated to help their fellow man.
You know, that idea of giving is such an interesting tool. I was taught once by a mentor of mine. He said, if you want to learn how to do anything, teach it.
Bingo.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of our principles. I mean, we literally have a guy who just started a chapter of the Break Your Fear Adventure Club in Seattle, and in 2 days, he's got 43 members. It's just exploding, and he resisted and resisted and resisted for 3 months. You know, he committed to doing it. He bought the franchise. And he's just resisting and resisting. He's going through all this stuff, you know, the paralysis of analysis. And I'm finally like, dude, do it now. You must, by Sunday night, have it done. He did it. Bam. People flooding in. And I Skyped with him last night. He is on fire. I mean, his face is lit up. All the dots are connecting. He's firing on all 8 cylinders. He gets it. You can't get it from sitting behind a screen. You can't read it in a manual or in a DVD series. You have to do it. The learning is in the doing. That's what I learned in NLP, and I got certified back in 96, and it really didn't hit me that much back then, but they said, the learning's in the doing. You don't learn by what we call, or how they teach us at school, the vomit learning, where you just cram it in, then vomit it out on a test. I mean, what do you remember about high school literature? Or science? Or history? Can you
just
tell me?
Just little snippets that aren't even don't pertain to anything.
Right. But here, do you remember? Let me ask you a quick question. What are the four characters of Seinfeld?
I have no idea.
Oh, you okay?
I never really spent my time on
Jerry, Elaine, Kramer, and George. Yeah.
Okay, so there's the example. We remember.
I hate
identities.
Being not cultured.
No,
this is a good thing.
That's one of
the
key characteristics that Abraham Maslow defined about self-actualized people. They resist enculturation. So high five to you on that.
Yeah, I wanted to deny knowing just so I could be part of the
cool
club.
Thank you, but you nailed them off, and I can too. And I've watched Seinfeld a few times, but the reason why that is because as human beings, we're wired to tell stories. We sat around campfires for hundreds of thousands of years, and we said, yeah, John, he went out and hit the woolly mammoth right in the sweet spot right there. Remember that spot right there? And he was the hero. And there were victims that kind of limped around the camp, and there were critics that said, oh, we can't do it this way. We're going to get hurt. We're going to starve. And then there's just bystanders that kind of stand around. But the hero is the one that makes the plan that says, we have to eat. Let's go out and do it. And those people are the ones that we remember. If you want to be a leader, just ask yourself the question, what would the hero do? What stories would the hero be telling themselves about whatever the situation is? What emotional state would the hero be in? And then finally, what action would you take if you were the hero? And you'll come up with the answers.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about action here. I mean, I want to, and Perry, I definitely want to get your input on this because you have gone through this with your life and your business. But what are some of the things that, you know, if you had to give the next one or two steps to people listening today. Hey, this is what you need to do right now to start positive change, to create the success that you're looking for, to grow your business, to strengthen your relationships. I mean, I don't know, maybe they need to go get a base jumping rig and jump off of a bridge. I don't know. What would you say to them?
Get a base rig. No, I would absolutely.
I agree.
I would recommend not getting a base rig, but if you do, make sure you get a good mentor. But the first thing I would recommend is write down what you want to do. If that, it automatically makes you commit to that. And it can be anything. It's just making sure that's what you want to be and say, this is what I want to happen. And then work your way backwards from that. Say, okay, if I got to get to this point, and the easy thing to relate it to is money. So if I want $100, am I going to get $100 at one time? Am I going to get $101 bills or 250 cent pieces, or what am I going to do? How am I going to reach that goal? And then you have to look at the reality of it, and then you can make it happen. But it's putting together a plan, and it can be with a relationship, and it can be with your business or whatever it is. Obviously, everything's going to have a lot of moving parts to it. A business is going to have your operations. It's going to have your marketing. It's going to have your sales. It's going to have your financial models that you have to put together. It's going to have your products that you're dealing with. At what margin levels you're going to operate at, acquisition of products. So there's many different, the administrative side, there's many different functions to it, but it's identifying them all. If you don't identify everything, then you're not going to deal with everything. And here's honestly what I do on a day-to-day basis. When I sit down at my desk, I open up and I have a page for each function in the business, and I have a task list for each of those functions. It doesn't mean that I'm going to do each of them, but I'm going to work with the people that do those tasks and make sure that they're on point and they're headed in the right direction. And it's no different than base jumping. When I say, okay, I'm going to want to go jump off, Mount Brento in Italy, you know, first of all, I got to put the plan together. What am I going to be jumping? How high is it? What are the conditions? What chute am I going to need? What kind of pilot chute do I need? How am I going to get there? Who am I going to go with? All these things. So it's putting together a plan and following through with that plan and making it work. But once you write it down, you can systematically deal with things one thing at a time. That way you're not dealing with things twice. So it's all a process of organization for me, at least.
Now, when you talk about that process of organization, I want to add one tidbit in here. Do you think it's worthwhile to plan for the sacrifice? I mean, I hear a lot of people when they set a goal talk about what they're going to have to do and, you know, kind of the steps to the goal. But if you're going to move forward on anything, there's going to be a level of sacrifice. But I never see people write down what they're willing to give up in order to get to that goal.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Sacrifice is part of it. I remember when I started this last business, I almost decided that I wanted to be poor, because that would give me the drive. So I said, you know, things are going to be different. And I told Christina before we started this process, I said, we're going to change. Things are going to be a lot different for about 3 years, and then things will turn around. And it actually followed that whole path. But But I knew it was going to take that amount of sacrifice. So I was willing to go ahead and go through that process. But yeah, you do have to make those conscious decisions to get rid of certain things that are going to be in the way of you succeeding.
Scott, what do you think? What are the next steps for people out there looking to make these changes?
Step number one, you've got to admit that you've been playing the role that you've been playing, the victim, the critic, or the bystander. That's the number one thing that will kill you, is you cannot try to change your behaviors to be a hero, to be a leader, while unconsciously you're telling yourselves poor me stories or stories about the economy, about it's the president's fault or it's the economy's fault or it's the greedy Wall Street bankers. You've got to cancel it out. You have to start telling yourself a story that everything is perfect. And I know that sounds crazy, but it actually is. You may be in pain, but that's a signal to change. And what it's a signal for you to change to do is to stop. Step number two, say these three words: I'm responsible. If you literally, I know it sounds simple, but if you will stop and go, okay, I really have been playing the victim, or I've been playing the critic, and I see where it's got me physically, financially, in relationships, in my own self-esteem. And if I keep doing that, that's what I'm going to keep getting. You got to connect the dots in your head and admit that to yourself and say, you know what, from here on out, I am responsible for my creating my own reality, everything. And you say that to yourself, I mean, like 30 times, just say it out loud. Say, I'm responsible. I am responsible. Just over and over and over again. Just walk around saying that. The third thing that you need to do is make up your mind to be the hero. Now, the hero, there's a lot of things there. The hero has a mission. The hero is unselfish. The hero lives in a state of courage. There's really, I mean, not to take up too much time here, you can go to our website, findingyourhero.com, and download a free report. There's a 60-minute audio where I literally take you through the steps. It's totally free. It's my gift. Again, just wanting to pay it forward. And there's a 15-page PDF that we'll go through. It'll explain what the problem is and what you need to do to fix it. So that's what I would recommend doing, really, just to save time on this show. But just to cover the quick steps, you got to admit where you're at, admit the part that you've been playing. Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage, and we are merely players. That's exactly what's happening in your life. You're not perceiving the world as it is. You're literally creating it. You're creating your own victim stories over and over and over again. This is the self-fulfilling prophecy. You're falling down unconsciously so you can keep telling that story. You've just got to make a decision to be the hero. The fourth thing, and this is where I think we could all agree here, is you got to get out of your head. And you've got to retrain yourself in this society that teaches you to keep everything at arm's distance. You got to get out and start doing things. And that's why we started the Break Your Fear Adventure Club, because I've been doing this for 6 years. And we've run a lot of circles, done a lot of workshops, a lot of stuff online. And people get stuck in, for I call it the eternal seeker, the eternal workshop to workshop to workshop. I know people have spent $100,000 on workshops, and they're still planning their business. I'm like, man, what you need to do is come out and go firewalking with us. You need to come out and go skydiving, even just if tandem. Come ziplining with us. Handle the snakes. Break through a board. Train for a triathlon. Do anything to get out of your body. And we call it acts of courage. We've even dressed up as homeless people and walk around Atlanta begging for money. And it's amazing what happens. Those people that are stuck in their heads, when it's over, they're like, oh my God, I'll never not give money to a homeless person again. I'm like, why? I had no idea what it felt like rejected.
Yeah, and that's a whole different subject. But I mean, totally no respect or anything. It's like you're not even a human at that point.
Right. So that's part of being a hero is recognizing that we're all connected, that we're all really one, that separation is an illusion. Even Einstein said that. He said the greatest illusion that's ever been pulled over eyes of mankind is that we're separate individuals. We're actually one big organism. So you can make a decision to be the hero. Now, you have to train yourself to do that. And your body language, the way you breathe, the look on your face, your eye movements, the tone of your voice, it's not really what you're saying. People are watching what you're doing. 55% of your communication is totally nonverbal. 38% is your voice tone. Only 7% of your communication are the words that you say. So if you start training yourself to think and act like a hero, it'll start showing up. I'm sitting here looking at you guys. You both are in incredible shape. You got a serious look on your face. We're here. We're talking about a serious subject. action step. You both know that action steps have to be taken, but I can read all that on your body language. I've worked with thousands of people, and when people are playing the victim, their shoulders are slumped over. They've got a tone like this. Oh, this is happening. Or the critic. Nah, 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 nah. This is wrong. That's wrong. And we do experiments. We take four people in a workshop, and we set them in seats, and we say, you're the victim, you're the critic, you're the bystander, you're the hero. You're standing on the ground. It's 9 in the morning on Monday, September the 11th, 2001. Boom! A plane hits the building. What do you do? You're the bystander. What are you thinking about? What stories are you telling yourself? What emotional state are you in? Now, what are you going to do about it? And they're like, And then they go into it. They go into the part. Then we're like, all right, good. Now, you're the victim. What are you thinking about? What emotions are you feeling? What are you doing? Oh, my God. They're running down the street. They jump up out of their chair, and they run. All right, you're the bystander. What do you do? And they're like, oh, hum-de-dum. Usually, they pull out their phone, and they start taking pictures. They start doing this, like they're trying to record the event. All right, you're the hero. What do you do? All right, you, we got to get in here. Get, water. We got to get in that building now. We only have a few minutes to get as many people out of there as we can. And people that are watching are like, wow, that's really powerful. And the people that are doing it, it's a powerful experience. But what's really crazy is we take the same four people and switch roles.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm.
Then they're like, oh, my God, I get it.
Yeah, because you can have any mindset you choose.
Yeah, you absolutely can.
Yes, you can shift. So you guys have heard change happens instantly. Most people think that happens at the level of behavior, or some people really get it wrong, and they're like, I can just attract to me the boat, the car, the law of attraction. No, the real change that happens is how you see yourself. And what I heard you say a minute ago is you have to decide. The first thing you got to do is decide what you want to be.
Right.
We're not human doings. We're human beings, mm-hmm. And people think they're going to have the things they want to have, then they're going to do the things they want to do, then they're going to be happy. No. First, you have to be what you want to be. You've got to step into the role, then learn how to do the things that you want to do. Then you can have all the reciprocal awards. You got to decide you want to be a base jumper, then learn how to do it.
Right, and you don't decide you're going to be an unsuccessful.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to be a, right. Because you don't have a choice, and that's a perfect example because there is no alternative. It's one way or the other. And back to your question, you're saying, what would you shed, like you had asked a while back? I guess you really have to shed the negative people and the negative thoughts and all those things. And if you've got the energy and time and you want to help enlighten those people, like Scott's made a career out of it, and that's awesome. And I think that has to be done, but it has to be done with yourself first, or you can't help anybody else. So you have to do it for yourself first, and you have to get grounded, and you have to have that direction. You have to have that purpose. And once you do that, then you can help the other people.
And I'll tell you, if you're going to be a business owner or a coach or anything like this, I'm just going to save you some time right now. If you really want to do this, you always have to remember to take care of yourself first, because in your most powerful hero character, in your most powerful facilitator role or leadership role, the people that are in their victim, that are in their critic, are stronger than you because they've been practicing it their entire lifetime and society supports it. So you absolutely must get support. I mean, get with Andy here, right? I mean, you'll support people. Get with Perry. You guys have websites. Write questions. Don't be I'm sure you would take an email. You would take a phone call, right, and give away a little bit of this stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, I mentor people now, and people mentor me, so it's not I'm at the top. It's like I'm just part of the big pyramid of trying to get to where I'm trying to go, and I help people try to get there too because I want people like you, Scott, who didn't take 10, 20 years to learn it. I want them to do it in 5 years or
right.
10 years, at least half the time because it's possible for sure.
There's a tremendous amount of satisfaction in seeing somebody get it quicker than you, believe it or not. But again, our society teaches us to secretly laugh when somebody falls down and to resent people when they succeed. And if you just check that out, does that really make you feel good? I don't feel good whenever I see people not succeed. I feel like I'm doing something right when I see them succeed and see them learn and grow, even if I don't get any credit for it at all, because I know the principles work.
But the default of not being in action is voyeurism, and that's really what we're seeing our society turn towards.
That's the bystander.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
If you just think of those three roles, the three negatives are the bystander, the critic, and the victim. The positive role is the hero. And it's a real simple, it, just try it, you know? Think of the 9/11 exercise and play that out in your head. What would you do? And just take like 1 minute to sit in each of the roles and act it out. Don't just do it in your head. How would you stand? How would you sit? How would you breathe? What stories would you be telling yourself? Make a tone out loud, even if it's just a tone. Like, what kind of tone would the victim make? Oh, you know, what kind of tone would the critic make? Mm-hmm. What would the bystander make? Whatever, you know?
Yeah.
What would the hero do? Let's go. Let's roll.
Right.
Right? It's real simple. And if you take that tone and that body language into the gym, into the grocery store, walk through the grocery store as the hero, okay, you will buy different foods than if you go in there as the victim. You're going to go right to the comfort foods if you're the victim. Okay, if you're the hero, you're going to go to the health food section. It's the behavior is generated from the identity. So stop trying to discipline yourself. Stop trying to put patches on your arm to stop smoking. Stop trying to get hypnotized or reprogrammed. You are the controller. You're the director of your life. Just step into the role. Play the part of the hero.
Well, guys, if people out there are listening and they're thinking, hey, I need to plug into one of these programs, or, you know, Perry, I just want to hear more about your story and personally connect with it, how do they go about getting in touch with you guys? Perry, let me start with you.
Well, I mean, I most people access me through the company, and the company is Solar Energy USA, but my email address is perry@solarenergy-usa.net. The website is solarenergy-usa.com. But the thing about it is that business has sub businesses under it, which is net zero and things like that, that help commercial businesses and residential companies or residential people get to net zero, to a zero energy usage, and become less consuming of power. And it's not anything, it's not a green movement. It's nothing more than managing to your life and managing to yourself. I mean, there's a lot of waste, and it's not dissimilar to how you lead your life. If in a business, it could come down to survival. If I've got a manufacturing business and I'm trying to, my bottom line is the most important thing. And if I've got increasing electrical costs, then I need to curb that in some way, shape, or form. So it could mean the survival for me as a company. And honestly, as a household, it could have a huge impact on me. So that's what our main goal is as a company. As an individual, I want to help people in whatever way I can. So obviously, people can reach out to me in that way. Scott's business is built more driven towards helping you, certainly as individual and as a group of people. And as I think is a great, fantastic thing. Scott, how do people reach out to you?
Just go to findingyourhero.com. And all the information's right there. Like I said, there's a free 15-page PDF action guide and a 60-minute audio where I just take you right through everything you need to do, from recognizing the problem and then not being a victim of it, but you have to admit it and recognize what's going on in society. And there's some things that you need to do. There's some things you need to stop doing, and there's some things that you need to start doing. And there's a Facebook page. You can go to facebook.com/RangerGoodnight. That's my fan page, and I communicate to people there every day, and I blog on another site too. You can find all that information at findingyourhero.com, including joining the Adventure Club, and everything that I've told you about is free. You don't have to pay for anything. I'm not trying to sell you anything. We do have weekends and stuff if you're interested, but really just take action. You know, do the steps, do what we've talked about here on the show, and ask for what you need. Ask for support. You do not have to do this alone. This is what we do for a living, support people, and I would be glad and honored to support you through your process, whatever that needs to look like.
And Andy, people know how to reach you, right?
Well, they can always find me at renegadeconcepts.com, or you can tune into our archives and listen to some of our other shows as we talk about the strategic thinking and how we break some of those conventional realms that people fall into. And you can do that at renegaderadio.businessradiox.com. Guys, thanks so much for being on the show today. I tell you, I feel like we need to turn this into like an event where we can actually get some people in motion and in action, because obviously we could keep going on this topic for
I could bring some snakes
for a long
in here
time.
If you want.
Well, exactly. But then we got to get people in the studio actually handling them too. So
yeah.
We know we'll be cool. We need to go out on the street, right?
Yeah. Well, we can bring somebody in here that's got a fear, and in about 15 minutes, you know, before we can do a little before, take some video so people can see that they actually really have the fear,
right.
Do some techniques, and then have them in here handling it and have them talking about how different they feel. It's a pretty dramatic example.
There you go. So if you're fearful of snakes, shoot us an email. We'll see about having you on the air, and we'll get you over your fear real quick. Guys, thanks again for being on the show today.
Andy, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
So those of you out there listening, I hope you take away from this today. You know, we're not necessarily telling you you've got to go jump out of a plane or throw yourself off a cliff, but what we are telling you is that if you want to make long-lasting, permanent changes in your life, you want to achieve the success that you really deserve, and you want to find the happiness that I think we all expect and want as human beings, you've got to make some change. You've got to take some action. And Perry and Scott and I, we tend to use the extreme sports as a mechanism by which we deal with our own fears, the endurance sports as a way to break some of those mindsets and take your life to a level of discipline that and consistency that most people just aren't willing to engage on a day-to-day basis. Anybody can be something for a little while, but building a lifestyle of consistency is an entirely another chapter. So I hope you've learned something from that today. And remember, as always, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.